You know, I've been interested in money ever since I was a little girl. This is rather ironic because I've never had much. I was raised in a Navy family. My father was a chief petty officer. And though we definitely weren't poor, we weren't well off either. Still, as a topic, I find it rather fascinating. One of the first experiences that I can remember around the issue happened when I was about 4 or 5. The Electrolux salesman was at our house. I was upstairs. I'd probably been sent upstairs and could hear my parents tell him they just didn't have the money for such a machine. I went downstairs with piggy bank in hand and dumped my money all over the living room floor. Here, take this, and you can buy the vacuum. Of course, it wasn't nearly enough, but my parents were so charmed that they did decide to buy that Electrolux. Now, before you think I was too goody-goody, let me confess to 2 crimes. In the first grade, my parents sent me to the local Catholic school because they felt I needed more discipline than what I got at the public school, kindergarten, where I'd gone the year before. Now, read into that whatever you want, but let me tell you that my mother and father were not Catholics. One day, I wanted to go to church to see what it was like. And this church was about six blocks away. And it's rather mind-boggling that they let me go by myself. I mean, I walked there by myself. But they did, and they gave me some money to put in the collection plate. Now, I'd never been entrusted with money before. I did have the piggy bank, of course. But I'd never been entrusted with money. Well, I kept it. And I bought a jawbreaker on the way home. I remember trying to explain how I got the candy and being very vague. I guess I wasn't in too much trouble, though, because I don't remember any consequences for that. The other confession is a family one. We started attending the Episcopal Church every year. We got what I think were called mitre boxes. I don't know that's for sure, but they were sort of like guest at your table boxes. We'd always lose it and then have to find it when it came time to turn it in. And I think my parents put money in it at the very end. And an aside here, I know one nameless family here who had a boof guest at your table box and had to stop reading the stories that came with it because the kids would be sobbing at the dinner table and they couldn't eat. Somewhere when I was about 8, I saw a Ma and Pa Kettle movie with a scene that involved a collection plate in church. I checked it out on YouTube and it's there. And it's under the title, Pa Kettle Gives a Sermon. The part I remember is actually only about 30 seconds long. Pa Kettle is sitting in a pew with his boys. The metal plate is passed along, and at each kid, there's a clink. When it gets to Pa Kettle, he counts his children, looks into the empty plate, and puts in an IOU for 25 cents. Fast forward to a Navy base in Orange, Texas. Father Keith Barden was our priest, and he reached out to Navy people, especially sailors, which wasn't often the case at other towns and bases. He got my parents involved, and my brother and I were eventually confirmed. One time he said, this man was a very unusual, dynamic man. And one time he said he wanted to give something, put things in the collection plate and give them out during the service instead of asking for money. This made quite an impression on 12-year-old me. I felt very much at home at St. Paul's, and Keith Barden is a person who made a profound influence on my life. He would visit people, families, on a regular basis, when his car was broken, he made the rounds on a bicycle. Now, this was during the hot, humid summertime of East Texas, and this always impressed me. Now, my mother and father were not sophisticated people, and the whole spending, pledging process, left them wondering. And a churchwoman came to our small Navy apartment to ask for their pledge. Now, this was in the early 50s. So this lady had a little suit, and little white gloves. And she assured them that it was confidential information. Then my parents were horrified when the churchwoman proceeded to tell them about Mrs. So-and-so across town who had pledged whatever amount. Now, I'm not sure it happened exactly like this, but it makes a really good story. In later life, my mother was very ashamed that she could never pay her pledge. This really bothered her, and it bothered me because it bothered her. And after her death, I discovered that every Christmas she gave a substantial gift to the church in Roseburg. I don't know what this was all about, but I'm sorry it caused her so much distress. Now, I've had my own distress, too, with pledging. At First Church in Portland, one year I didn't pledge. And a member of the committee called me. Now, he had mental instability problems. I had guilt. And the phone conversation was disastrous. He was screaming at me. I wasn't very happy with him. But I was a single parent, and I just didn't have it to give. Now, I know that in my life, I've been the happiest when I've been involved in pledging. You ever heard the expression, no duh? No duh. Well, for me, is a no duh thought. If I'm not broke and down and out and able to carry some financial weight, of course I'm going to be happier. And when I can give all that I can give, I'm the happiest. Please remember, this is one person experience, and I'm not here to make a pitch about pledging. So you can stop squirming in your seats. I've been doing a lot of reading and thinking, and I've talked to people about their take on church giving in general. One friend pointed out to me that charitable giving is one of the five pillars of the Islamic faith. I'm not a Muslim, and I may distort what I see through my own filters, but I find it interesting that giving is right up there in terms of importance. In Wikipedia, it says zakat, or almsgiving, is the practice of charitable giving by Muslims based on accumulated wealth and is obligatory for all who are able to do so. It is considered to be a personal responsibility for Muslims to ease economic hardship for others and eliminate inequality. In this country, alms or charitable giving is generally separate from the institution. In other words, the Red Cross is separate from BOOF. So for Muslims, I don't know how zakat sorts out from support of a mosque. Still, the notion of money is not hidden. It's right there. Non-Islamic faiths need money to survive too, but instructions about it are not as direct and are scattered throughout the Old and the New Testaments. Christians, and by extension, UUs, have a variety of ways of supporting their institutions. Some groups function month to month with the asking of donations from the pulpit to pay for rent, utilities, etc. Most of us are familiar with the collection plate where it is used near the end of the service to gather the gifts of the faithful for the support of the church and for charity. That sentence is a paraphrase also from Wikipedia. I know that here at BOOF, we make a definite commitment to give a quarter of the plate for different public service agencies around town. I personally have not seen that done before and was surprised to see it as part of the offertory. I don't remember this source, but some Pentecostal congregations do not pass a plate, but individuals rise during the service and put money in front of the pulpit. Now that, to me, brings quite the image up. But anyway, that's what I read. And as you probably know, Jehovah's Witnesses go door to door. They don't ask for donations, but are often given them as a way of supporting their congregations and outreach. According to an acquaintance of mine who is a witness, many people bequeath their estates to the witnesses because they are grateful for the contact, even when these people themselves do not belong. People who are members of the Latter-day Saints of Jesus Christ, or Mormons, are required to tithe 10%. Now, I have a friend who is a Mormon, and they're very loyal, but they have kind of a creative way of doing that. So that can happen too. Years ago, I used to work in the Albina area of Portland. Martin Luther King Boulevard used to be Union Avenue. It was the major street north and south through town. And there was a nearby restaurant that had been a coffee shop, but it had gone out of business. It was reopened and run by one of the congregations in the area. Some friends and I went to lunch there one day, and I placed an order that went something like this. Me, I'd like a hamburger. Waitress, I can't take that order because we have no buns. Me, no hamburger buns, but this is a restaurant. Waitress, a robber broke in last night and stole them all. Okay. I don't know how or if the restaurant succeeded, but because of the stolen buns, I remember it, and I can only wish them well. All organizations, including BOOF, have to talk about money sometime. Though we all need to have that conversation, I am not asking for your money today. And as far as I know, nobody else is asking for your money today either. But sometime in the future, we will. One of my favorite fantasies, this is a good one, guys, is that I win the lottery, and when I do, I pay off the BOOF mortgage and give a huge endowment so that we can actively engage in many social justice projects. I would ask that the donation did not be used for operating expenses, because that, in my opinion, needs to come from the Booth community. If donors invest in Booth, either with money and or time, then they are vested, right? And before we get too excited about me winning the lottery, remember that the most I spend during any one week is $4, and that, which doesn't give me a lot of chances, just a lot of entertainment. I spend that money over and over again. And it's so much fun when I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to spend it all. We could eliminate expenses altogether and have a virtual community and advertise on meetup.com. That's a possibility. There is such a group in Nampa. And one time, out of curiosity, Charles and I decided to check it out. We went to where they usually advertise to meet, and there was no one there. Actually, there was one person there, and he was looking for it too, but he had never been before. I checked with one of their organizers later, and he said, you should have checked out on Meetup before you went out. Okay. Joel, I made a mistake. He wasn't very hospitable, and we probably have satisfied our curiosity. I like knowing that I have a community where I belong and know that it's here when I want to find it. I don't have to guess about where to go on Sunday morning or where it's going to be. Being at Booth gives me a sense of place and a feeling of belonging. One of the first sermons I heard Elizabeth give was that when she described how she, as a young mother, got her two children through a torrential downpour and got them inside their house. As I remember it, she took a deep breath and realized that they were home. I feel that way often when I'm here. I take a deep breath and I'm home. It may make us uncomfortable to mention money, but it's a necessity. And we all have our history when it comes to money, and we all have our history when it comes to generosity. And we all have our history of how we are willing to preserve what is important to us. I've looked around at other places of worship and have come to the conclusion, this is it. This is my spiritual home. Children and youth were participants today, and we elected to have the offertory at the beginning today so they could participate in our generosity. Last Sunday, I talked to them and asked if they knew what the offering was. I said, do you guys know what the offering is? Approximately 24 children were there. Almost all of them had pretty blank faces. And then one said, I think I've seen something like that. I think it's when they put the money in the basket to help support the fellowship. So this is one child out of 24 who knew what the offering was. We also asked them today to be part of the non-monetary stewardship process with a distribution of the Foursquare stewardship cards. And we urge you to keep your eyes open to new learning. I'm not here to ask for money today, and that's just one aspect of preserving our lives together. Our stewardship efforts last all year long, with conscious giving to each other as friends, not because we're going to eventually ask for your monetary support, because that's why we're here. Develop a caring community and meeting our mission, right? That's why we're here. This is it. This is our spiritual home. Thank you.